with our intrepid New Jersey correspondent and our transportation national. We have to talk tunnel.
We have to talk tunnel. We have to talk tunnel. We do. The politics are amazing about this.
You guys don't care about Andrew Cuomo, who I just finished covering in Westchester using that great I-287?
We've got 15 minutes. We'll get to it.
I care about Cuomo. Can I just also say that Alan Hevesy handcuffs? Like, oh, my God. And here comes Ozzy.
He's
Ozzy's mouth is swollen. Can you talk, Ozzy?
I can talk.
I can talk. I don't care what you do to me. I'll talk.
Fresh from the dentist. Radio people should never have to go to the dentist just before going on air.
I figure if Carl Paladino can talk with a foot in his mouth, I can talk with a few less teeth in
my mouth. Oh, and he sounds like he just came from the dentist, because this is digesting politics, which gives you cavities. I'm Brian Lehrer.
I'm
with
Andrea Bernstein.
I'm Bob Henley.
In
an undisclosed location, and that's
awesome. So, yes, it's been
today.
This amazing political news week. Alan Hevesy, Andrew Cuomo, Carl Paladino, but tunnel, Andrea.
Well, this is what is so fascinating to me about this so-called access to the region's core tunnel, which is that this was a mass transit project that was really the son of John Corzine, Frank Lautenberg, Robert Menendez. I mean, it was always a really sort of heavily New Jersey project, even though it would have connected New Jersey and New York. But what's so amazing is that...
Well, it wasn't for the sake of people who live in Manhattan.
It wasn't for the sake of people who live in
Manhattan. Brian, newsflash, people leave New York to go to New Jersey to work.
Well,
this just in. Thousands
right.
of them.
But not
there was
that
a Manhattan
much.
Economic development
in
argument and
term.
A regional air quality argument.
Yes.
Because the idea was that it was supposed to be able to bring more New Jersey workers more easily into Manhattan and also enable people to leave their cars at home and thereby polluting the air, and at least some air wafts over the Hudson, and some people would be driving into Manhattan.
So let's get right to the Paul Krugman argument here, which is that this is essential nation building. Canceling a project like this, and in the terms that you just stated it, this is short-sighted political advantage or ideology for the next 10 minutes to cancel a project like this, when this is basic, essential, future-oriented infrastructure.
Well, let me just say that, you know, infrastructure projects have, and then Bob, infrastructure projects have always been, had bipartisan support. I mean, you know, former Governor Pataki was behind them, U.S. Senator Alphonse D'Amato was, former Mayor Rudy Giuliani. These were Republicans that were very big into infrastructure projects. But Chris Christie is with the nation. I feel like we've been talking on air, online, about how I have been going around to all these swing areas, and people have been saying, I believe in infrastructure, I believe in roads, but we don't have the money right now. So we can't spend money we don't have. And this is from people who have in the past 2 years learned a thing or two about, you know, not spending from their own budgets. So I believe that Christie is exactly where people are thinking now, you know, sort of long term. We can't think about that. We have to get through the near term.
This whole conversation is leaving Ozzy numb.
Oh.
but Bob, you've got a whole other context on this, right?
I have. Paul Krugman is doing it from 10,000 feet, and that's where it should be, because that's where the New York Times has taken a look. I understand that. But down on the ground, what's been happening for a long time is the federal government going back to, ever since revenue sharing with Nixon, it's been sliding away from its historical obligation to more fully fund and be at the table for water, sewer, and transportation. So in the void, states have stepped up and created new, shiny, independent authorities and utilities like the Port Authority. And there are 35,000 of them, Brian, and they have created tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of debt. The problem is with these projects is the federal government was only bringing $3 billion to the dance. That's a third. Any governor who's looking at the big dig in other places would not be prudent unless they tried to put people through their paces. Moreover, I know that we don't talk about this because we're not national reporters, but how long can the United States...
I'm a national reporter. Speak for yourself.
Well, I'm always reminded.
Transportation
Nation.
It's not Transportation
guys, what I want to get across here is something that never is connected, which is how long can we prosecute two global wars on terrorism and spend hundreds of billions of dollars? It's a guns and butter argument. We've seen this movie before. And then also, it's not like the Depression, and this is where Krugman needs to spend some time in a chain gang or building something. Today, what we don't – no, really, truly, because what we don't do today is you don't do it like you did in LaGuardia's day. You find a young guy coming out of college, give him a job at the Port Authority working as an engineer, and a bunch of guys hanging around with a pick who get $5 to work for the day. We now sub it out to contractors, folks. Okay, that's why the stimulus isn't working, because we give it to politically connected contractors here or overseas who've done their pay-to-play thing, and so the money gets creamed off the top in terms of profits. It's not the government building these things. I wish people would pay attention to that.
But hang on, Bob, because in this case, they weren't talking about any – this is not funded by a bond from New Jersey or even a bond from the Port Authority. It's funded by their regular budgets. And there's $1.2 billion in this that it was a dedicated toll from New Jersey that was going to this. So, I mean, what Christie was saying is I'm going to have to borrow more. But, I mean, I do think that an ideological predilection was tipped here, because the Federal Transit Administration and New Jersey Transit have been in discussions for many, many months about what exactly the cost overruns would be. And the RPA, the Regional Plan Association, and federal sources confirm, that there's not the dog on TV that I'm watching right now. That's in Bob's house, where he is, by the magic of radio, recording this. But you know, just sort of getting back to this, I mean, what the federal sources and the RPA were saying was that those discussions were ongoing, that there was actually one scenario where this project would not be so over budget because it would be construction costs are low, interest rates are, you know, near the bottom of where they've ever been, ever. And, you know, in terms of federal government commitment, I think if you look at sort of the whole scope of the federal government, I think that's true. On the other hand, this was the largest transit project in federal government history,
It's still a pathetic percentage of the project. And also, people have to know the specific place we're talking about, which is the Meadowlands. And if you look at the contract bid specifics, you'll see that they were conceding they were going through some of the most toxic earth that New Jersey has, because it was through the center of our former industrial area. That's before we shipped the factories out. So there were a lot of issues that weren't dealt with. Plus, I think John Corzine was in a rush, quite frankly, to get something up that he could use for the campaign, because that's when the rollout was of the big announcement.
So as we sit here and record this on Friday afternoon, it's possible that at this very moment, Ray LaHood, the transportation secretary, and Governor Christie are meeting. So is this
I can't really see. I don't know how. I mean, Bob, I can't think of any way in which Christie can sort of walk out of this. I mean, he's been pretty declarative. The only thing that I could think was that they could perhaps, to sort of maybe save face for the federal government a little bit, set up some kind of task force to discuss future transit options. Right. I mean, I can't imagine anything that they could say today that would make Christie say, oh, you know, I was completely wrong and I didn't really mean to do this.
I think we need to slow down the pace of this conversation for just a minute, because Ozzy wants to say something and he's on drugs.
Not yet.
But not yet. You don't want to say something, or not yet you're on drugs?
Not yet. I'm not on drugs yet, but I do have a prescription for, I think, Vicodin.
You're on Novocaine, obviously.
All right,
Ozzy
has cotton in his mouth, so we'll all take a breath while Ozzy talks.
So, but when is there a good time to build a project like this? It's when construction costs are low, when interest rates are low, and those usually happen when the economy is slowing down. And this is an argument that Mayor Bloomberg has made before. This is the perfect time to start building something, because projects like this come online years later.
True, although it happens to collide with the moment when years and years of accumulated debt are coming home to roost. And Christie, you know, more so than some, but like other governors, are finally having to get serious about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think
Where's Bloomberg's money?
Well, I think is interesting. Bloomberg, not only did Bloomberg, you know, I mean, Bloomberg didn't offer to help in any way? And he was asked specifically, and he said, no, it's, you know, this is the Port Authority. I don't know why he's thinking about the Port Authority in particular. I mean, it's, you know, there's a number of agencies. It's their project. But, you know, let it also be said that, you know, Carl Paladino, we all know, believes in flashing government. But Andrew Cuomo, also, when we, Ozzie asked him, what, Monday, Ozzie?
Yes.
What do you have to say? And he said...
He said, we're looking at this and we'll get back to you.
We'll have an answer shortly, I believe.
There's an update, folks. Today he just said that it was a terrible mistake to pull the plug and he can't wait to sit down as governor with Christie to work it out.
Ex post facto.
Bob, speaking of Andrew Cuomo, you what today?
Well, I was up there and he actually had what I believe is a campaign rally. It was totally uncontrolled. There were people they didn't have the name of behind him cheering. It was so spontaneous. He actually took questions from the media. It was something I knew that the handlers were very nervous because it was a new thing, but it is October.
So, any gaffes to report?
Not at all, except the reporters who insisted on asking him about his prowess.
Well, that was Paladino's line, right?
Exactly. And then they went on from there, and they're fabulous style, asking him about his extramarital affairs, at which I had the wonderful opportunity of saying, speaking of building bridges, do you care about tunnels?
And oh, the media I love you, Bob. Yeah. Yay, public radio.
So but how did that actually go? Because Paladino, who, you know, we talked about this last week, everybody probably knows who listens to this podcast, said Andrew Cuomo did. Then he said, I don't have any evidence. And then he said, I do have any evidence and I'll release it at the right time. And then this week, or maybe just today, yesterday, he said, I don't have any evidence, but Andrew Cuomo's prowess is legendary, which is, I guess, why that got asked. Now, I think legendary means it's a legend and there is no evidence. But so how did the media actually handle this while not asking about how they balanced the budget and little things like that?
Or even the little event called Alan Hevesy yesterday. No one asked about that. I had to risk life and limb to ask a follow-up on that question.
Well, did we learn anything about what Cuomo would do with either the state budget or with his agenda? Because it seems a lot of the times when Cuomo appears anywhere, there's not a lot of details, and he spends a lot of time discussing Paladino rather than the specifics about what he will do as governor to deal with the budget. Did we learn anything new today?
I will say that when I asked about the tunnel, our eyes met and bonded in a way like I was throwing a man a lifeline who did not want to talk about his private parts any longer.
Alan Hevesy?
Well, I have a very cynical political question to ask about Alan Hevesy. Okay, this is the most half-baked conspiracy theory, you know, that I could think of, but it's the only one I could think of. So is it at all possible, since it gives Cuomo the opportunity as Attorney General to look like he's the guy taking charge, cleaning up Albany, actually getting a corruption guilty plea from the former state controller, that Hevesy took a dive here at all to help Andrew Cuomo? Yes?
I think I totally reject that. You know what that is? I think that's insulting to the career prosecutors who are making the case, Brian. There are people who are committed law enforcement people who really don't care who is attorney general and have been making these cases for a long time. And is, quite frankly, in the sense of confidence about pensions, the sooner you can put a man away like Alan Hevesy, the better.
Well, I'm not saying that I believe that theory, but I'm saying that I haven't seen it in print, and because it's October, whatever it is, that you have to at least ask.
They've been going on for 3 years, Brian.
All right, Bob, let Ozzie duck.
Right. Well, I have a different question. Did they ever explain where the checks and balances in the controller's office fell short? I was talking to a financial reporter who said the case doesn't hinge on them saying the checks and balances. There's several layers of approval that an investment has to go through before it even gets to the controller. That those weren't exactly violated. The investments themselves didn't lose money.
Oh, see, I heard this argument. We made this argument in the newsroom, too. Here's the thing about that. It's really not that bad. It's okay, and nothing really went wrong. It's all political. Let's forget about it. Let's dial back here. If you pull out the four top people, and this is what happened in the controller's office, who sign off on these investments under the sole trusteeship, that's why they call it sole. Not because it's sole food, because it means one. Sole individual. That's the structure of it. It's not a board like NYSER, like which is a municipal thing. Now, also, add to that, when people say, and this is the apologist of the financial sector, and the thing about this is the lost opportunity cost, Ozzie. You don't know what things they chose not to invest in.
But is that criminal? Because I think a lot of people, if you use that kind of logic, we don't know what legislation a particular lawmaker never advanced because of a campaign contribution. We don't
know. So what you're saying is fine. It's just a cost of doing business, getting helicopter rides.
I mean, I think there's a different question. There's two questions. Right. There's questions is where the pension funds hurt, and then there was also, it's also a question, did Alan Hevesy personally profit by being in the position
right.
where people would give him gifts to make certain
right.
decisions?
And it could be
and
no,
that's what
and
he
yes.
pleaded guilty to. And,
right.
you know,
he's
I
not,
just want
not
to say,
going
though, Brian.
To, not going to jail, by the way.
I find it very hard. I mean, you know, Cuomo is still the Attorney General of the state of New York, and this is still his prosecution. And I once, a very long time ago, worked in a prosecutor's office. And unless there was something statutory which under which Hevesy had to announce yesterday his guilty plea, and I don't know, perhaps that's the case, if there was flexibility in the timing, I mean, it's the top person that, you know, chooses these things. So, I mean, I think that anything is possible, but I do certainly think that, you know, whatever actually happened, and maybe nothing, maybe that just, you know, was controlled by career prosecutors, and this was what, you know, how the timing fell out. But it helps Cuomo, right? I mean,
politically,
it's
yes.
good for Cuomo
Absolutely.
To be shown sending somebody away in handcuffs, a corrupt politician,
a fellow
when
Democrat.
He's being... When Carl Paladino was making the argument, Cuomo can't be a reformer because he's an insider.
Right. Well, now Paladino sent out a press release, rapid response, saying he hadn't gone far enough and asking questions about Carl McCall because Carl McCall was in the sole proprietorship structure, which evidently is a great temptation that Alan Hevesy couldn't withstand. And then also there's the open question of Mr. Ratner. Mr. Ratner, who is...
Ratner.
Well,
not Bruce Ratner.
Ratner
from Atlantic Yards.
Right. Mr. Ratner has been... was President Obama's car czar, also Michael Bloomberg's financier with a special expertise in offshore banking, former New York Times reporter, man about town, and author of the book Overhaul. The question remains, the Wall Street Journal's reported that he's received criminal immunity. His firm Quadrangle paid some $12 million and had to write a letter publicly exclaiming how he was unethical and inappropriate. And that is still hanging out there. The Wall Street Journal has reported that he has been granted criminal immunity. Mr. Cuomo will only say it's under investigation, and Mr. Paladino can't wait to pounce.
Digesting politics addendum.
Oh, wait, can I just say something really weird? There's something really weird going on, which is we are sitting in a studio now which has a television playing, where they are playing over and over advertisements for Elliot Spitzer's new show. And then last night I watched The Good Wife, which is sort of based loosely on Elliot Spitzer. And
You're obsessed about that show.
I am obsessed about the show. And I happened to be walking by this summer the Peter Florick for State's Attorney campaign office, which was actually set up in Midtown Manhattan. So, you know, my head is spinning.
Spin worthy. On September 10th, 2001, and I mean September 10th, 2001, we had all four Democratic hopefuls for the New York City mayoral nomination on the Brian Lehrer Show. The primary was the next day, as some will recall. Alan Hevesy won our listeners' straw poll after his appearance because
Oops.
He was so compelling and so relatable and so smart on the issues facing city.
I miss him. As a journalist, I miss him.
I just want to express, and I'm not making a joke here at all, the sadness of this moment because he was a guy who really knew what was going on in New York.
If you had to create a public servant that you wanted and that you could trust, you would have come up with someone very much like Alan Hevesy. He didn't come up through the ranks of the political machine in Queens. He had a PhD. Andrea is nodding her head in some agreement or disagreement.
Hey, do you have anything left over, whatever you guys are drinking in there? Do you have anything left over of this?
He delivered the eulogy at Donald Manus's funeral.
Right.
Okay, there. Go look that up and see that.
I'm not saying that he's innocent.
I liked him as a public figure. I agree. I think as state controller, he did great studies. He was informed. You could talk to him about the issues. He did these aggressive audits, and I miss him as a public figure.
Oh, man. I'm on another planet. Thank you.